Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, fortnightly podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hello, Will, how are you doing?
I'm great. Hi, Carlton.
Hello. And today we've got special guest Paolo Melchiore. How are you doing, Paolo?
Hi, I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. Thanks for coming on, super. So, Paolo, tell us and the listeners who you are and how you got into Django and programming and What's your backstory?
So I'm Paolo Melchiore. I'm from Italy, a small town close to Rome. And I started programming in high school many years ago. I started with Pascal language. And then I haven't any internet connection, so I started studying myself HTML. And for the dissertation, the final exam, I made a website. I was the first one in my school at the time. And then I decided that web developing is my life. And I studied computer science at university. And I was very interested in Linux and databases and all this cool stuff. So I made a dissertation on free software and about licensing free software developing. And then I started working for a company with Python. I studied only the classical language in the university, like C, Java, a similar one. But then when I started working with this small company, we worked with Plone. Yep. It's a CMS based on Zope. And so I started using Python 2.4 in this occasion. It was very good because I started also being involved in Python community. I attended my first conference in Naples, Plone conference was the international one in 2007. And so I made internet website for a few years with Plone. Unfortunately, it was based on the ZODB, the Zope object database.
Okay.
Is an evolution of the Pickle from Python, one of the first NoSQL database in the history. Well,
that's kind of cool, right? I mean, yeah. Like Pickle's nice because you get some objects, you've got a few things in memory, you go, I need to keep those. I'm just going to pickle them. And then you get them back and they're exactly how they were before. And there's none of this, serializing to SQL. Yeah.
But pickles are always dangerous, right? I always think of pickles, I think danger. For security, potentially.
Yeah, was a bit difficult in that time to interact with a classical website or other technology because there is only this ZODB, this object database, and no one know anything about it. So you are forced to translate data in relational database. And for this motivation, I started using Django. At one point, I changed my company and we started exchanging data in industrial software. So I picked Django because it was one of the first framework database that worked well with Postgres. So it was Django 1.0, I remember. Right. And another thing strange was that Plone was not ready for WestGI. You can deploy Plone on WestGI at the time. And now I think they updated all the infrastructure. But then I started using Django in a WestGI environment and with relational database. And I fall in love with Hedman and with Buttery includes possibility for Django. And then I found also that you can use very easily GeoDjango and PostGIS for GIS. So, and then I'm still here using Django after I think a lot of versions. So this is my trip from starting it to now.
So you found it and you stuck with it and here we are.
Yeah,
fantastic. So I wanted to ask you about GeoDjango because I saw you gave a great talk at DjangoCon Europe in Copenhagen on GeoDjango. So
We made this, we rebuilt this website for a company in France. They sell all around the world buildings and house, a luxury house close to the beach. So the name of the company was Mer et Mer. My French is not good, so I don't know if the pronunciation is okay.
You got to be careful how you say that.
Yeah. And so we used Postgis and leaflet to show the map, all the things you can sell and you can buy on all around the world. And we made everything with Postgres, from the geographic location to the full text search in the description of these houses or around the world. And was very interesting because we did everything in the same environment. We didn't use any external engines to search for location or search for information. And we had also this faceted search in the website. You can see at the same time the location and how many of every option you can find clicking on different filters. And so I wrote this the talk, and I spoke at Copenhagen last year. It was very interesting, and I received also a lot of requests of information and how we did this this platform, because a lot of people found that the tutorial in GeoDjango documentation was a bit complex. Me too. I found that it was very complex case study, and then you can instead adding a point field on your model and starting using leaflet or starting using the open layer widget in the admin. And it's very, very easy.
So you just add that the single field.
Yeah. So we added also other field for boundaries and for states, other things. But if you need only a location for your object in the map, it's very easy to add. You can add point field. Oh, of course, you have to use a JIS ready database like SQLite, Postgres, or also MySQL and Oracle, but it's very easy to use. You, after migrating things, you can start storing location, and like other text or number, you can usually store there.
Okay, I'll ask you for the show notes if you've got a recommended tutorial or something that like is a little bit less heavyweight than the Django. GeoDjango tutorial.
Okay, perfect.
I think GeoDjango, we've had Anna Kiefer on to talk about it, but I think for both of us, Carlton, I don't really know much about that area of Django. I mean, that and the ORM are the two areas where I'm pretty ignorant. But of the two, I think GeoDjango would be a little more fun to dive into properly at some point.
Well, what I liked about your DjangoCon talk as well, Paola, was the how you showed using Leaflet.js to, because it's like, okay, so I put a lat long in my database. What am I going to do with it? Ah, well, actually, there's some really good UI frameworks that you can just plug it into, and it's quite simple, and you're up and running, and that's, you know, you get to a certain standard quite easily.
Yeah, the shortest path I think you can use is Leaflet can understand GeoJSON out of the box, and you can also install Django REST framework with the its plugin. You can expose
GeoJango serializers.
Exactly, you can expose this your location data in GeoJSON format, and Leaflet can understand directly, and you. All your, your front-end developer in your team can understand it without any other addition or configuration. It's very, very easy to use.
Is it still Leaflet its own thing? I thought the creator went to Mapbox, and because I've used Mapbox a little bit. Is it one and the same now, or are they still separate?
No, I read also that the creator work now for Mapbox, but Leaflet is still active developed library, and they are separate things. I think Mapbox found the development of these libraries, I think. But we use also Mapbox for personalized tiles. You can personalize still graphics and colors of your map if you need. Or you can also use other tiles from other services. We also use this stack for the last project I used, PostGIS and GeoDjango, was for mobile application in Android. We send location to this mobile mobile application. They send to us feedback with another location. So you can use in web and mobile phone, and you can store everything in your database, in your Postgres, with no problem at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's one of the use cases that I've had is you get the location data from the phone, and then you need to store persist that on the back end. GeoDjango, there's your
option. You can also calculate live distances and all other things.
Bounding boxes, intersections.
I've done a bunch with Mapbox, but I remember it and maybe Leaflet came on the scene around, I think it was 2012, when I was in San Francisco, when Google Maps, they tried to charge for their API. And so like the company I was at, we went from free to tens of thousands of dollars, and everyone around us and everyone said no. And so, because Leaflet and Mapbox are both based on OpenStreetMap, which is sort of, as I believe, like Wikipedia for geolocation. So anyways, that was sort of the Cambrian event for, at least in startup world, everyone said, I mean, because nobody talks about using Google Maps with GeoDjango that I'm familiar with. Almost everyone uses Leaflet or Mapbox these days.
Yeah, it's true. We use some services from Google that are better there,
like the address search.
Yeah, because they have a better function for this. But also with OpenStreetMap, there is a Nominatim, is a service you can use if you don't need a so very careful location in a city. It's good enough to search for addresses. But one thing I like of this solution is that you don't rely on external services. So suddenly, for example, like in Google Maps, they start charging or closing or limiting their services. You have to change. You don't have all your data in your database. Instead, with Postgres and PostGIS, you store everything on your own, and then maybe you can ask for help or for other additional information externally, like for addresses, similar. So
you're a big Postgres user, right, Paolo? Like, you, I mean, not to knock the other databases, but you're a big fan of Postgres. You've been using it a long time.
I started realizing a few years ago that it's the enterprise database for open source environment. So at university, we use very old and heavy database, like from IBM or Oracle, that's similar. And at the same time, that period, everyone uses MySQL, because WordPress and other PHP framework was based in MySQL. Then when I started using with Django, I found it that there was still in that time very interesting and powerful feature. And I started also attending the Postgres Day here in Italy, and speaking about how we used Postgres from the point of view of a user with Django and with Python. And every time I try to update my Postgres, searching for new feature to use, and also full text search was one of them. So I think it's few years ahead from other databases.
So I saw you on Twitter the other week. Someone was there was a thing going around about what's your tech opinion that, you know, gets swords pointed at you. And yours was that if you're running Postgres, you don't need Elasticsearch. Which I liked.
Yeah, I'm starting using full text search with Django. I found it from the release in Django 2.0, I think.
It was add the search fields that you can add on. And
yeah, when I found this feature, I was shocked. I realized that there is other things to use instead of external services. Unfortunately, I forced to use external services for doing search in mobile application and other web services. I want to clarify, I don't have anything against these services because more of them are also open source and based on Lucene. It's open source from the Apache Foundation. But I'm an engineer. I want to solve problem. I don't want to install other software from other person and spend my day trying to connect solution and to find the best configuration. I want to solve things writing code. So using Django ORM and relying on the Postgres full text search functionality, I was able to concentrate my effort in doing the best search experience I can do. And without having to have more than one instances of the external engines to solve the configuration and the stuck in the middle from Django ORM and the languages to query in Elastic. I was frustrated after two or three projects using these external services. I think other people can do a better job than mine using that. But when I found that I was able to search directly in the database in the Postgres, I started using it. And then I started also asking myself why in the Django project website they are using Elasticsearch. So after studying a bit, I proposed to the main list to update it, and there was people against and people pros about this this update. But at the end, also the fellow of the time team, yeah, say that he also had troubles updating the version of the Elasticsearch and the libraries to communicate with Elasticsearch. And so I proposed a pull request. At the time was 2017, and after a long reviews and updates, finally we start using Django and Postgres full text search internally, and now it's 3 years, it's working, so I'm happy.
And you're busy doing the same thing again now, right? So as we speak, there's a pull request open to update the version, yeah, of Django that DjangoProject.com is running, and update the
Version 12. I saw there was a whole, yeah, Marcus and Tobias, and yeah.
So I mean, you know, there's a bit of an ops thing, is that we have to get all the various pieces into place in order to do that. But that's super work.
Yeah, because as I shown on my talk, Django update every year with a lot of features. Also Postgres do the same things. So every year there is new languages they had. You can search for text in new languages. Also Russian or other different type of languages in Postgres. And they added also web search syntaxes and other feature, searching highlights, or they speed up their indexes. And so if you want to use all this new feature, you have to update frequently your Postgres version and also your Django version. So I started proposing to update the Django version in the Django project. And if we, at the end, we will be able to update it, I want to propose new feature and to the Django search, because in this year, I asked every time question to user, also in conference, also last year in Copenhagen and local meetup, for feedback about the search function in Django project. And I received a lot of requests for improving the functionality or to change something to be more user-friendly. The second pull request I did in the past for the search functionality was the multilingual functionality, because with Elastic, the only English worked for a few years. And then with Postgres, we was able to add more than 20 languages in the web search. So I think also to attract more people in the Django ecosystem, the first thing they found searching for Django was the documentation and the search functionality. So having a better working search function is a main goal to attract people.
I'm using that every day, right? So I need something quickly, jump over to djangoproject.com, quickly type in the search bar. You know, I need, so just before we were recording now, I was looking up the same site cookie setting. So quickly type it in, up it comes. You know, if the better that search works, the better, no?
Yeah, it's true. I use every day too, because I use also for searching about full text search, because sometimes I forgot about all the attributes you can use. Or it's impossible to remember everything. And I prefer understanding how things work and then reading the details in the documentation, because it's very convenient.
I think a lot of people find out about features in databases or in Postgres in particular from the Django docs, right? So you find out about HTML fields or JSON fields or array fields from reading the Django docs.
Yeah.
Well, because Postgres had full text search for, was it 10 years? It was quite a while before
It
made its way into Django itself. I remember, we'll link to your talks, and you have a great article. I gave a talk, was it last year, on search. And basically, I was just looking at your information nonstop all last year for inspiration. So it's really excellent. But I remember, because I have a little bit less programming experience than both of you, when I came to Django from some other frameworks, the two of the things that jumped out at me is that there wasn't a built-in sign-up author registration. I had to do it myself. And that search was also lacking, because a lot of other frameworks have something, or they have Elastic bundled in. So I agree that ways that we can make it easier and have an out-of-the-box solution. I mean, kind of the whole point of that talk and a tutorial I have was showing like the layers of search, and you can quite easily do basic search. But then, of course, it gets much more complex. So I think that's a broader thing that's good to have accessible to Django people, or people coming to Django who are used to just having built-in search in whatever framework they're coming from. But I love that you're pushing the boundaries with Postgres itself, because we had on the founder of Listen Notes, which is a site that does searching through podcasts, and he's using Django, and he's also using Elastic because he was also familiar with Elastic. So the fact that you're an expert, but you're also not just porting over, you know, existing expertise, you're still learning and taking advantage of the new functionality that's being added. That's not always the case, but that's obviously extremely important to have someone doing that and talking about it rather than the confines of an enterprise system where they maybe can't do that.
Yeah, motivation, because I try to promote Django and Postgres full text search is also because Elastic is very famous and they do a very great job in marketing, and a lot of projects are using Elastic, so they don't need other people speaking pro this solution. I'm not saying anything against this solution, but I'm only saying that if you need a easy and quick solution to implement a full text search, and you already have Django and Postgres, you don't need anything in advance. So
that's the thing, you've already got it running. You're already running Postgres. So why take on that extra difficulty, that extra complexity, that extra ops thing? Use that first.
Yeah, there are, I think, scenarios when you need external search engines. For example, if you have centralized the search functionality with Django application and, I don't know, Java application and NoSQL database, a relational database at the same time, if you need a central point to search on, maybe you can start thinking to a dedicated search engine, and it's convenient in this case. But I work in medium to large projects in my company, and usually a Postgres is enough for everything. So if you have more than one Postgres replicated, you can manage millions of records, and there is a lot of space. And if you need Elastic, maybe you have a very big project. Otherwise, it's not.
The example that the listener notes founder gave us was high ingest rates, because he's ingesting updates to podcasts, and they come in like, you know, there's a lot of podcasts. So if you're trying to index all of those, the updates are a lot. And that was the reason he cited for needing Elasticsearch, was that he needed to handle that ingest rate. But you know, a lot of sites aren't like that.
Well, I saw that Apple, I think just in the last month or two, added the ability to search like within podcasts, which... So he's got a fantastic service, and hopefully he's got enough of a running start that he can keep that going, or maybe they'll just buy him. But yeah, he's at a crazy scale. I wanted to ask about hosted solutions. So Algolia, I'm just curious if you've played around with Algolia, because that's something I've used a bunch and seen it develop. I'm just curious if you have any personal experience with that option.
No, I never used Algolia. I used for past project for a startup, you use the Sorl, but like Elasticsearch is based on Lucene, and I use I tried also Sphinx for another project, but in every project there was dedicated instances of these services. In one case, there is an external company that manage these external search engines, and we was forced to do all the search on this search engine and all the writes in the database on our databases services, and was very frustrating because there was a synchronizing problem, and people have this delay in searching for information and accessing this information, because maybe they modify a detail on a project of a product, and the writing in the database was very fast, but then they was forced to wait for the synchronization to the external search engine, and so the final user experience was very, very frustrating, because they are asking, where is my data? And we forced to say, you have to wait because the external search engine is very slow, or there is connection problem. And
it's so, kind of eventually consistent.
Yeah.
I where did my data go?
It's funny. Also, my wife usually find for, you know, shopping online. And every time they complain because they found the last one, shoes, in the market, when she click on, found that in the today page the shoes is gone. There is not anymore. And I explained to her, it's because they don't synchronize quickly the list of products and the detail page. So it's a very common problem.
Yeah, and from the perspective of you're crafting your own Django application, that's a difficult problem you want to postpone for as long as you can, is making sure that on every write to your database, your search index is updated. If you can avoid that problem, you know, forever, put that off as long as you possibly can, because it's a big one.
Well, and the issue with search, of course, is that an average user is used to Google. So anything on your average website that isn't Google, they're going to say, well, this is crap.
Yeah,
which is a pretty pretty high bar. You're also a Django Girls coach, and there's been a change in the leadership. I believe we're going to have one of the new founders on quite soon. But I just wanted to ask you about, maybe you could tell people what is Django Girls and your involvement with that community.
Yes, of course. For the first time, I was a coach in the Django Girls workshop in 2017 in the EuroPython. And it was a very interesting experience. Django Girl Workshop was a one-day workshop for girls organized all around the world. And they accept girls that want to learn how to write Python and Django and working in web environments. And you can propose yourself like a coach. And during these days, you can coach 1 to 4 girls and helping them to following the steps in the Django Girls tutorial. It's an online tutorial. It's very easy to use. You can also use on yourself. And usually I suggest also to people that want to following something more longer than the Django tutorial. And you spend the day answering for question about why Python is not installing good in Windows machine, or I have a very old Linux machine, it's not enough, or similar question.
Why your static files aren't loading, that kind of thing.
And when in my first coach experience, there is 2 girls, very, very skilled. They already use Linux. So I waited all the day asking if they need some help. But at the end, I was not able to helping them because they are already very, very skilled. So I updated the tutorial to Python 3.6 in the meantime to spend the day. But also we organized it in Rome and in Italy. They are very active. They organize in all city all around Italy, but also all around the world. There is every month workshop. Unfortunately, during this period of pandemia, it's difficult to organize in-person workshops. So I saw people organizing also online, but I hope that after this period was gone, we can start again organizing Django Girls workshop days and in conference or during the year, because it's a very good.
Yeah,
it's an awesome program.
That reminds me, I need to be a coach. I've thought about it and I haven't done it. And certainly once things are normalized, because here in Boston, there's a very active Python community, which has regular meetups and even workshops. And that would probably be a perfect place to, you know, have a number of people who are, because part of the problem with Django, you know, because I teach it for a living, is you have to know a whole bunch of other things before Django makes sense. So I spend a lot of time with, okay, you have to install it. Have you installed Python? Do you understand web development? Do you know a little bit about HTML, CSS? There is that issue of what's the bare minimum you need before you can dive into Django. So if you're at a Python conference, presumably they have a little bit of Python, right? But if I just walked into a school, I can't just probably start teaching Django.
Yeah, and this occasion is good because there is girls from every environment, people from advertising, people from a school, and you found out they understood Django from very different backgrounds. And I learned a lot trying to explain to this girl how Django, why Django works in that way and not in another way. So. And also you can meet other coach and have a very good relaxation in your city or your region, with other very skilled and people that care about the community and also involving girls in community. I think it's very good.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, I'm thinking there's also a Django meetup in Boston, which I think is one of the biggest ones in the world that I don't think we've done a Django Girls there. We should do that. But yeah, the questions you get from people really solidify or makes you think, right? Because people come in, maybe they don't know anything, or maybe they come from an MVC setup and they find controllers confusing, or it really makes you 360 on what is Django and how is it different. But I think that's something actually this pandemic will probably continue for a bit. I want to do some videos to explain just like how do the pieces fit together? Like, because Carlton has a fantastic talk on middleware, but I think middleware is something that your average giant Django person doesn't really understand at all. And you know, but it could be, you know, I could just show them Carlton's talk, but you know, it could be simply explained, you know, peeling back the onion, but explaining the interaction of views, templates, models, and URLs. That's basically the Django story. If you can internalize those four things, but that's kind of the Django way, I guess. So anyways, yeah, people should volunteer and you learn a lot. You meet great people, as you say.
Yeah. I hope the next DjangoCon Europe, we'll have a Django workshop too, maybe.
Well, they just announced they're going to try to do it in, I think it's June. They put a date.
Yeah.
So
it's the week of June, I think.
Yeah. So I hope that happens. I still have my plane ticket that I haven't gotten refunded for. So I'm ready to go.
Yeah. The last DjangoCon Europe in Copenhagen was very good. I met also Carlton there. And also the sprint days was very, very interesting. I met so many talented Python programmers, and it's a very good occasion to speak with other people, exchange ideas. And I think we'll be able to do again.
Yeah, I miss it. The sprints at Copenhagen was where I realized we needed a workshop for new contributors, because like, I was there trying to help people and I was running around different tables. I must have, you know, spoken to 40, 50 people, but there's only one of me. So
yeah,
I wasn't able to do that. So in DjangoCon US San Diego afterwards, I did a workshop where we had like four tables all together all working, and it was brilliant because people were helping each other. So Django Porto was meant to be like the second running of that workshop, but it obviously didn't happen this year. So next year.
Well, but Carlton, you're working with, I mean, from Google, we got a season of docs grant.
Yes.
So there's work being done on the contributing section.
Yeah. So there's a season of docs project that's going on. That'll be running till March with Gabby Precious, who's from Nigeria. So she's working on that now. And hopefully that will make the contributing guide more accessible, because, you know, starting as a fellow, I was asking, why don't more people contribute? And the big answer I heard a lot of times was, hey, the contributing guide is really quite intimidating. Like it's, you know, several thousand words long, and it's got all the information you need in there, but perhaps it hasn't got a pathway which guides you into that first contribution as well as, or as smoothly as we could. So that's what we're hoping to improve over the next few months there.
Yeah. Well, so we're coming up on time a little bit. Is there anything we haven't asked you about, or any projects or things you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, I want to say I think it's interesting. In the company where I work, we use only Django. I want to say that this year the Nobel Peace Prize winner was the World Food Program, and we did work in Django for the World Food Program. So Django is involved also in these fields, and I'm very happy to say to other people to make they understand that open source and free software can help the humanity in general, in various form. Also, writing code, it's a way to help other people, and it's a good way to be in human beings. So.
Super. So,
yeah.
So Django's your Nobel Prize winning web framework almost. Yeah.
For this year.
Yeah. Paolo, thanks for coming on. That's super. What a great chat. Thank you so much.
Thank you all in this particular day to speak with me and for inviting me. It's a very good experience.
Super.
Great. Thank you.
With Django Chat, join us next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.